Turn in your Bibles
way back
to the book of Exodus. We pause, as we always do, in our progression of sermons in whatever book we are studying. When we get to communion, we pause and we focus on something that will enrich our understanding of what Jesus done, and why do Christians take these symbols? I want to remind you that this is called the Lord's Supper. Well, they used to hold a supper with the Lord's Supper. There's no more supper. This is a minimalist presentation of what the early church used to do. We give grape juice and a little piece of bread. Well, actually, now it's a wafer, isn't it? These are all symbols, but I want to take us back. I want to take us back, and I want you to try as best you can to remove all of your understanding of what you know about communion. And I want you to turn to Exodus chapter 12, starting with verse 1. And I want you to go back to the time in which the first hints of communion happened. We know so much. Hindsight is 20/20, don't we? But the precious first generation of Jewish people out of Egypt, nothing personal to Al, the Egyptians are wonderful people. But I want us to go back to that first generation of Jews who knew very little, and how God, in his patience of 1,500 years, was teaching them salvation history. You know, that's a fancy term for meaning God was working out our salvation from the very moment our great-grandfather and great-grandmother, great-great-great, sin. I want you to know we all go back to the same grandma and grandpa. We may not look alike too much on the outside, but we all go back, and that great 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 grandfather plunged us into rebellion against God. And God didn't destroy the race. He could have. He planned for our salvation. And the Bible is the record of that history of salvation. And this is the first big object lesson of the salvation God had in mind through Jesus Christ. And it says in 12:1, "Now the Lord said to Moses and Aaron in the land of Egypt." I wonder if you recognize that the Lord's Supper started in Egypt. How do you like that, Al? The first Lord's Supper was served in Egypt. That was the finest civilization in the world. That was the cutting edge of everything, Egypt. And it says, "This month shall be the beginning of months for you." Now notice the Jewish calendar starts with Passover. I believe that hints at the fact that our salvation starts. All of things start with looking at what Jesus has done through, it says, Christ our Passover Lamb. But they didn't know this. And here is what they were told. "Speak to all the congregation of Israel, saying, on the 10th of this month, take one lamb." Now stop right there. You don't know how radical that is. First of all, ancients sacrificed animals. They had some idea that God was offended. But they were so spiritually lost that all they knew was that somehow, some way, God was offended, but all the religions were totally, horribly corrupted and evil. And you have to understand the first thing is most of these pagan cultures either offered human sacrifice or a bull. The finest of bulls or humans. This is how corrupt they had become. And God says to the Jewish people, what I want you to do is take a precious little lamb. Now, they must have been scratching their heads. A lamb? Why, the Egyptians offer bulls. As a matter of fact, some cultures, they sacrifice little babies because God is angry. What will placate his wrath? Somehow they had this basic corrupted understanding. And God said to the Jewish people, take a itty witty bitty lamb. Now, those of you who are in my Bible study on Wednesday night, you know it gets wild, but you'll now know what Nathan said to David. Brings out the history of lambs in Israel. The Israelis raised lambs because they were their clothing and everything. And what happened was that lambs were so cherished in Jewish culture, if I can anachronistically put this back on this time, that they actually had lambs for pets. Remember that? Nathan was telling David this guy had a lamb. He gave it as a pet to his two little kids. Remember that? So God says, take a lamb. Whoa, Lord, don't you want a magnificent bull? How about a human sacrifice? Why this little lamb? It's innocent. It would be a perfect little lamb. When Rachel was little, I'll never forget, Alabama, Birmingham had a lot of these petting zoos. And that lamb's long gone now, but I'll never forget, we went over to this a lot, to this little petting zoo before Josh was born. And there was this farm, and it had a little lamb. And the little lamb liked little kids. And it would go up and kind of knock Rachel a little bit, just like it was playing, like a pet would play. And she was scared, but I just got the biggest kick out of this precious little lamb that wanted to play with all the little kids. And it just was sweet. The idea here is sweet innocence. I wonder if the Israeli people were just scratching their heads, I don't get this sweet innocence for a sacrifice. You see, we now can look back, but they must have had puzzlement. You'll take a lamb, an unblemished male, a year old. Keep it until the 14th day. Okay, that means for 14 days. Can you imagine your little kid seeing the little lamb playing with it? It would become for 2 weeks. Come on, keep a little animal for 2 weeks and see if you don't, if you're an animal lover, become affectionately bond to it. And then it says this. Then the whole assembly of the congregation of Israel is to kill it at twilight. Now, can you imagine how they did that? The head of the family took that innocent little lamb. I guess they were tough in those days. That's what they had to do. You know, they didn't have Vaughn's, Albertson's, or Costco. You know, all of our butchering now is done long distance out somewhere. You never see it. Every once in a while they'll write a book about it. But I'll tell you something. If you're the head of the family, you would be the one to kill the animal. I would struggle. I don't know if I could do that. I guess if my family was starving, there's a lot of things you'd have to do, but they would cut the lamb's throat. I had a butcher in San Diego, a Navy man, when I had my first little church, National City, where the Nichols would remember, little church, he was a butcher for Piggly Wiggly in Oklahoma. And in those days, he had some age. Piggly Wiggly didn't buy from a great slaughterhouse somewhere. He worked in the plant where the animals came in, and he told me this story, and I never forgot it. It made me feel terrible. He said he hated to kill lambs because what they would do was pick up the little lamb, take its feet, tie it, hang it up from the rope from the roof, and then cut its throat. And he said some of them, they didn't cut the vocal cords somehow, would cry and it would sound like a baby crying. It would cry until the blood had drained from its body. I guess they were tougher in those days. What was God teaching by this? He was teaching the flannel graph lesson of the innocency, of the sacrifice, of the sweetness. When Jesus came, he was completely innocent of all those wicked charges against him. But it was teaching that God would be placated for sin by sweet innocency of the sacrifice. And they shall eat the flesh the same night, roasted with fire. The fire, of course, being symbolic of judgment, but we know that now, but they didn't. And they shall eat it with unleavened bread, bitter herbs. Do not eat any of it raw. Remember when Jesus said to the Jews, if you don't eat my flesh and drink my blood, remember that? He was referring to the Passover lamb. He was trying to teach them graphically, Christ, our Passover lamb, has been sacrificed. See, they didn't see these things. Jesus said, unless you eat my flesh, no wonder. He was telling them, I'm the lamb that long ago in Passover. And you shall not leave any of it until morning. Burn it with fire. Now you shall eat it in this manner, your loins girded, your sandals on your feet, your staff, and you shall eat it in haste. It is the Lord's Passover. They had to eat it quick. Then it says this, verse 12, for I will go through the land of Egypt on that night, will strike down the firstborn in the land of Egypt, both man and beast, and execute against all the gods of Egypt. I am the Lord, I'm the real God. And here's what they had to do, and would you have been able to figure this out? Take the blood of the lamb. By the way, they had to catch that blood in a bowl. You know what? We have a doctor here, but I do believe that after a while that blood would coagulate, wouldn't it, Doc? Can you imagine taking hyssop, putting it on the sides of the doorpost? What are we doing here? They didn't understand what we do. Put it on the lamppost, this coagulated blood. And the blood shall be a sign. Put it on the lintel. On the house where you live. And this. And when I see the blood, I will pass over you, and no plague will come near your dwelling. I think there were Jewish people that thought this is crazy and didn't do it. You know, we know what this means now, but think about that. Take coagulated blood and put it on the lintels of your doorposts, and when I see the blood, no harm will come to you. See, that's the essence of what Jesus was going to do. An innocent would be a substitution for the death of many. And that's exactly what we're celebrating this morning. When you trust in Jesus Christ, God sees his sacrifice, his blood, and any judgment because he sees that blood. Doesn't come anywhere near you. And it's this first time in Egypt that God began to teach his people his hatred of sin and his self-sacrificing love for the sinner.